the academic definition is it's the use of technology and innovation to improve livability, workability, and sustainability. That's really the definition. Now, more broadly, though, perhaps more philosophically, it's about recognizing, number one, that our future belongs to cities, right? That a humanity's future is in an urban context, that there are challenges, that we need to think differently. And those ideas and, you know, the reinvention of how we deliver cities is going to be customized to communities. So I always say what's important perhaps in Delhi might be different from Melbourne in Australia or Helsinki, you know, Finland. And so it has to be reflective of the culture and community.
Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. If you are new to our channel, please consider subscribing to it and hit the bell icon so that you never miss an update. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I am privileged and delighted to welcome a very, very accomplished individual from California, USA, Dr. Jonathan Reichenthal. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. An awesome pronunciation there. Well done.
Thank you. Jonathan is the CEO of Human Future. He's the CIO of the city of Palo Alto and has been named in the top five digital cities in America. He's the CEO of O'Reilly Media. He's been awarded and recognized many times, and he's the author of a book called Smart Cities for Dummies. So, Jonathan, let's talk about Human Future. Tell me about what you do here.
Sure. Well, you know, despite my youthful appearance, I've been in the workforce for about 30 years, doing a variety of things. Really fell in love with the topic of innovation and had a chance to work at PricewaterhouseCoopers as their innovations director. And then, as you said, I worked for O'Reilly Media and even a city, and that's a big part of my story that we're likely to get to. But then I left. I decided about 2.5 years ago it was time for my next adventure. And well, here I am in Silicon Valley. You know, I've been working for other people. It was time to have my own startup, you know. And if there's anywhere you're going to do it, this is the place to do it. And anyway, I really wanted to have a lot more freedom in my life and the ability to make choices that I thought would be things and actions and places that would be most valuable to what I have to offer. And so I left and I looked at some opportunities, but then I said, I'm going to do this. I'm going to try this myself. I'll give it a few years and see what happens. So what it really is, Human Future, it's a small boutique firm. And it's sort of like a smorgasbord of the things that I love. Okay, so a big part of it is education. I'm absolute passionate educator these days, and that's everything from writing content for organizations to being a professor at several universities. I write some very successful online video courses with LinkedIn Learning. So that's my education piece, and then we do consulting, traditional technology consulting, a little bit of business consulting, and have a small set of really awesome clients around the world. They include governments and some private organizations. And then finally, the third part is about investments. It's the social impact part of my work, which is if I can bring either my expertise or some cash to the table, can I help move forward, you know, some startups in the social impact space. And I have a portfolio of about 10 companies today. You know, I my plan is not to sort of grow some big workforce, you know, some huge organization. It's more to do things that are meaningful and important every day and work with partners. And so that's the way I get stuff done is working with some incredible partners these days during COVID, all virtually, of course, but in normal times, we try to meet locally or you know, continue to do our work over video as well. So that's it in a nutshell.
Fantastic. So, you know, to quote you, own your destiny, be bold.
Yes.
Help me understand this philosophy.
Oh my goodness. We only have a short time together. Let me see if I can sort of summarize it. There's a few parts to it. I think far too many people wake up each day and don't realize their full potential, you know, and it's, there can be many reasons for that: lack of confidence, maybe just they're used to going to a job, when in reality they may be better suited doing something else or even working for themselves. So, you know, I've said a lot that you have to find your song and sing it every day. And far too many people don't do that. So, you know, that part of it is kind of making sure you spend time understanding yourself and working on yourself and doing things that are good for you, because ultimately that'll be good for your friends and your family and your, you know, your children and others. And then, you know, what I learned probably too late in life or later than I would have liked is it's worth taking some of the bigger risks. You know, we it's a cliche, but we definitely worry about things that don't happen. You know, we every day we're worrying about things that we speculate, or, you know, when in reality the probability is very low or even, you know, zero. So, you know, if there is that opportunity you want to go for, or you want to change your skills, or you want to ask that girl for a date or that boy for a date or something, I say be bold, do it. And I think the last component that brings us together, mm-hmm, is, this is something that I realized some time ago, and every day it becomes more pressing, is life is short, you know, and I don't know if there's anything else, but this is what I know, mm-hmm, in terms of, you know, our lives, and you know, don't waste it. You know, it feels like we have one go, and so go for it.
Well said, very well said. So, you know, you also work on smart cities. My question to you is, what are some of the challenges humans are now beginning to face in our cities?
Yeah, wow. Well, the first thing you have to recognize is that the human experience is now firmly in an urban context. We are a urban species. You know, we're over 55-58% of the world now living in cities. And that's going to grow, by the way, rapidly. We're moving in about 3 million people every week moves into an urban environment. So we'll move another couple of billion by the middle of the century. So that means we need more energy. We need more, you know, clean energy as a priority. We need better ways to move around, because cars aren't working, right? If you've ever sat in a traffic jam and you're over there in Delhi, I know you know all about traffic.
Yeah.
You know, we need economic progress, right? You know, we see, for example, in a city like Lagos in Nigeria, growing rapidly. There's going to be tens of millions of young people who join the workforce in Lagos and the surrounding area. They need opportunity. What are they going to do? So we need to focus on that too. We still have really big issues regarding inclusion. Mm-hmm. You know, cities have provided amazing advantages, you know, for humans. They've been relatively successful over the years, but not for everybody. You know, we don't distribute the benefits of cities among everybody. There's really some big issues with the digital divide, you know, economic inequality, you know, just too much poverty where there doesn't need to be. We have those. And I think probably the last point I would make in the short time we have together is the big 800-pound gorilla in all of this is the climate. You know, our cities are the biggest producer of carbon emissions, which, if you believe the scientific consensus, which I do, the Earth is heating up. Yep. And, you know, if we're going to solve it, we're going to solve it in cities. Otherwise, this is an existential problem, you know, over the medium term. You know, with 630 cities on coastlines representing about 1.3 billion people, mm-hmm, you know, if they start to flood, that's a problem. And some are beginning to, you know, so this is not something 80 years or 150 years from now. This is now. Mm-hmm. So that's a big challenge. And you know, I'm an optimist. I think we have to come up with better ideas. We gotta be creative, and hopefully we can manage it.
Amazing. So, you know, you've also got a book titled Smart Cities for Dummies.
I do.
For our viewers and listeners, Let's start with your explaining what is a smart city. It's a term that is used by every politician around the world.
It is. It's a very neat catch-all, right? So the academic definition is, it's the use of technology and innovation to improve livability, workability, and sustainability. That's really the definition. Now, more broadly, though, perhaps more philosophically, it's about recognizing, number one, that our future belongs to cities, right? That a humanity's future is in an urban context, that there are challenges, that we need to think differently. And those ideas and, you know, the reinvention of how we deliver cities is going to be customized to communities. So I always say what's important perhaps in Delhi might be different from Melbourne in Australia or Helsinki, you know, Finland. And so it has to be reflective of the culture and community. In all of this, as we try to solve these major, major city problems, a core, you know, characteristic is the use of technology and new technologies. And that enables us to have new ideas and to think differently. But I will say this in my last comment. Some people expect me always to talk about, you know, things that are microchip driven, right? That the technology solution is going to be a computer, you know, or software. A lot of it is going to be that way. But bicycles are technology. Electric bikes are technology. You know, we see now during COVID cities all over the world embracing cycling in a massive way. Yeah. That to me also represents what it means to be smarter. And, you know, I like to say our cities, we need to build cities that are smarter and more sustainable, right? So there's the second part of that that sometimes gets lost. You know, if we continue on our trajectory, we're going to consume too many resources. We're going to pollute the air and the water, and we're going to have sea level rise and all sorts of issues with climate change. We have to address the sustainability issue too, to make our cities smarter and the planet healthier.
Very interesting. So, you know, you have worked on the city of Palo Alto, which is in the top 5 digital cities. My question to you is, what goes into making Palo Alto in the top 5? What does it do differently that, say, another big city in America does not?
Yeah.
And maybe if you can give some examples.
Oh, sure. I'd love to. When I joined the city of Palo Alto as their chief information officer back in 2011, I said to the city manager that we could make the city, you know, a leading digital city in the United States. We weren't entirely sure what that meant at the time, but we knew it would involve technology. We knew it would involve more services online, more convenient services, more digitalization. And within a couple of years, we were named the number one digital city in America, which is a real accomplishment that I'm, you know, I'm so proud of my team and the leadership of the city. And then every year after that I was there, we were certainly within the top 5, as you said. Part of it, part of the answer is kind of surprising. You know, you don't have to deploy everything and improve everything on day one. Mm-hmm. What you have to do is demonstrate that you have a vision, that the city has leadership, that has people that believe in a better future, mm-hmm. and understand how new ideas can be applied and how you can bring lots of voices into the conversation. So I would say, number one, it's leadership. It's having a vision. That's the first characteristic. And we had plenty of that between myself and the city manager and our elected officials. We had lots of that. Okay. Another big chunk is digitalization. It's just converting a lot of really ugly, you know, paper-based services into to meet expectations of a community that is already using their smartphone for everything, right? That's so, yeah. You know, they don't want, a community member doesn't want to go to a city building at a certain time, fill out paperwork and have to come back. They want to have an app. If they want to request a permit, which we made easier and we made available on a smartphone, if they want to report a crime, if they want to borrow a book from a digital library, we put a lot of stuff onto smartphones. The final example, I'll give you sort of an analog example now, a more of a physical infrastructure example. Palo Alto is no different than any other community in the United States and large parts of the world. And that has a lot of traffic issues. Mm-hmm. And part of the traffic challenge, well, it's multidimensional, as you know. But one of them is we rely on traffic signals, right? We're sitting at red, you know, waiting for it to go green. And by the way, you know, it could be 3 a.m. at night. There's no other cars around and you're still waiting at the light when it's red. Mm-hmm. So the question you have to ask yourself is why? If there's no other cars, why can't it be green, right? But if you take that idea and you say, okay, look at a long street, you know, let's say a street that's about 1 or 2 miles long. And along that 2 miles, there are several traffic signals. Mm-hmm. And what you want to do is use technology like sensors to detect, you know, car flow and optimize so that the most amount of cars can flow along that 2 mile, you know, avenue.
Yep.
And so you deploy these physical sensors on each of the traffic signals and they count cars and they look at speed and type of traffic and they all talk to each other. And, you know, if the magic works, suddenly traffic flows better and you can start to change the game on, you know, the traffic situation. We were well into that project during my time at the city. And then, you know, I left, of course, 2.5 years ago, and they're continuing to do the work. But that's an example of where we deployed hardware that in time will be game changing.
Absolutely fascinating. So again, my next question, Jonathan, is, you know, you're so involved in the digital community, in the digital world.
Sure.
My question is, what are some of the opportunities the pandemic has thrown up to enhance the digital economy?
Yeah. Well, look, this, for example, you and I, here I am just south of San Francisco. You're over there in Delhi in India. We're having an amazing conversation. We can see each other. Okay. You know, this platform is pretty reliable and good quality, right? So this is now a big part of our lives. You know, businesses, which were already seeing geography become less important, see no limitation in geography anymore. I mean, one of the examples of that is people working from home and then people saying, hey, I don't need to be in San Francisco anymore, even though my company is based in San Francisco, I can move to Texas, you know, or a very low cost part of the United States and still be very effective. So I do think that this embrace of virtual platforms and video is enabling us to think differently about when we work, how we work, and where we work, right? I think that's a big piece. The second one is I don't know what if we have a name for it yet, but it's sort of the delivery economy, right? Everything's getting delivered.
Correct.
I don't know. I'm going to guess it's similar where you are.
Exactly the same.
but you know, I'll give you an example of myself. Early on in the pandemic, last sort of March, April of 2020, you know, here in California and in Northern California, we locked down. I mean, no, it was a ghost town outside. And I, you know, my girlfriend and I were talking about this and it was like, how are we going to get groceries? You know, can you go to the store and you have to, you know, if to join a line, it was all sort of messy. And I said, well, maybe let's try ordering groceries, you know, to be delivered. And so, you know, maybe I was late to the game, but I ordered online and I found the service to be amazing. I mean, a little premium, of course. But wow, you know, I just go online, pick my groceries. I could even see the person in the store picking the groceries off the shelf and they would ask you, would you prefer this than this, right? And so everything now appears to be available through delivery. And again, that's game changing. You know, it's going to hit retail, physical retail hard, but we'll adjust. We have adjusted to major transformations of industry in the past. I think that's the second one, and just real brief as a third, is the adoption of distance health, right? Is actually getting an interaction with a doctor or a nurse or another medical professional, you know, again virtually. Mm. I had the experience, not to divulge too much detail, but I had something on my skin that I was kind of questioning about. Mm-hmm. And so rather than have to book an appointment and, you know, then have to drive and park and sign in and wait, and, you know, that's a big chunk of my time, I just, you know, went online, says I want a video consultation. They told me, you know, when they were available and we agreed. And when the time came, my doctor came on my phone. I pointed to my part of my arm where the skin eye thing was. And there we go. He was able to say, Jonathan, completely fine. No problem. And that we moved on.
Fantastic.
I think, by the way, I think that your question is fascinating and everyone's asking this question, right? Mm-hmm. I actually think the significant the outcomes, the consequences of COVID won't be known for some time. Mm-hmm. You know, lots of people can speculate and there's a lot of smart people, you know, saying what they think is going to happen and even myself. But I think the more humble answer is we'll find out in about 2 years, you know, because we'll look back and say, hey, we used to do things like that, you know, or we'll refer to sort of, we used to do it in pre-COVID days like this, but we do it like this now. So I think we'll know in time.
Very well said. So Jonathan, I'm going to move to the last segment of our conversation, which is a few questions for you personally.
Sure.
My first question is that someone who like you, who has spent so much time in technology, who's building such amazing products, such amazing organizations, what are some of the core values you believe in?
Oh, I love that question. I think values are so important. And they're important for you to know yourself. Like you have to figure out as soon as possible in your life, you know, what your values are. Some of mine are pretty straightforward, you know, honesty, you know, truthfulness.
Yeah.
I think that's really so key. And expecting honesty from people that you trust and people in leadership positions. That's really important. I think the second one is respect. You know, not only to be respected for your achievements or for who you are, and everybody deserves to be respected regardless, and then to respect others, right? So I think that's probably in the top three or four. What else would I say? I don't know if this is a value necessarily, but let me continue a thought and I'll give you one more. Is, you, as I've gone through life, you know, and later in life now, you know, earned more money and I've kind of, you know, been more successful, I realized that that next amount of money didn't make me happier. At a certain point, you almost have to disconnect your income with your happiness, because we too often connect the two, and that may not be, you know, giving you the satisfaction that you want. The last one, of course, which is an obvious one, I should have thought about this first, is lifelong learning is a value. Lifelong learning. I am committed to learning every single day. There's sometimes in a given year, I will take on a completely new difficult topic and try to get good at it. And this has served me well. It served me very well. It's made me more valuable in the marketplace. It's given me more confidence and it's increased my self-esteem. And I would expect the same from others too. Lifelong learning is a choice. It's a choice. And I really would encourage your viewers and anyone who's watching this who are looking for inspiration to recognize that committing yourself to lifelong learning is an incredible investment in yourself.
I agree. So I'm now time for one, maybe two questions.
Okay.
My next question to you, Jonathan, is that, again, as you look back at your life, you said 30 years of an amazing life, and I'm sure there's so much more ahead. But from where you stand today, what does success mean to Jonathan?
Well, maybe I don't yet know the answer to that question.
Okay.
You know, I think that's it's a remarkably deep question.
Yeah.
And it's something I think about a lot. I don't know that I have. I could give you the cliche answers, but I'm like, I respect you too much and the audience too much to do that. I think that is an area of my own personal discovery. And I hope I get there. I hope I get there.
Okay. And my last question then to you, who or what inspires you to keep pushing yourself to do so many different things?
Yeah, everybody asks me that. Well, I'll answer both. I can answer the sure. What and who, I suppose.
Yeah.
The what, The what is just a drive. It's a personal drive. It's a recognition of realism, you know, that, you know, it's, I'll paraphrase Buddha, who said, you know, the biggest mistake is we think we have time, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's such a motivating quality for me. You got to get stuff done. You know, there's not enough time, you know, it's slipping away if you don't, you know, embrace it and move forward and take those bold risks and try something new. I mean, what are you waiting for? What am I waiting for? There's nothing left to wait for. It's just all to go for, right. To go for it. So I think there's just a sort of a personal engine now that's driving me. In terms of who, I'll give a lot of credit to my father. Mm-hmm. I think my dad is an incredible role model. You know, he's in his mid-80s and he's still passionate and hungry for knowledge and interesting and you know, passionate about life, and you know, that's certainly inspiring. I think that's the answer I would give.
Fantastic. Jonathan, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. Really enjoyed my conversation with you on smart cities, about the human future. Thank you again and good luck.
Thank you very much. I'm so glad you're doing this, and it's so wonderful to have met you and spent even a little bit of time with you. Thank you for doing this. Thank you.
Likewise. Thank you. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.